This is 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. I'm John Shannon. Millard's still off somewhere in a sand dune on Prince Edward Island, I suppose. Today, something a little different. Two guests to discuss the beginning and the end of an NHL career, of a hockey career. Dan McKenzie is the president of the CHL. On the heels of the announcement that Gavin McKenna is leaving the Western Hockey League to play at Penn State, we talk about the future of junior hockey, not just in Canada, but in the United States as well, and the effect of the McKenna move, if there is one at all, and the new working relationship between NCAA and junior hockey, if there is, in fact, a working relationship. And then that's followed by Glenn Healy, the executive director of the National Hockey League Alumni Association, who very quietly might become one of the big winners of the new collective bargaining agreement with the NHLPA and the National Hockey League, as Glenn's organization will receive some much-needed funds to help retired players in need of assistance, whether it be for physical wellness, mental wellness, familiar wellness. It's a fascinating story that Glenn has been the leading edge of over the last few years, and it has paid now in a great deal with the new CBA that begins next season. So Glenn Healy will talk about that, but first, the president of the Canadian Hockey League, Dan McKenzie, discusses the McKenna effect and what's going on between major junior hockey and the NCAA. All that and more on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Welcome back to 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Darren is off again today. We're going to have to put an APB out for him or put him on a milk box. So, joined today by the president of the Canadian Hockey League, Dan McKenzie, whose business is always a good topic to talk about, but with the developments of last week and Gavin McKenna committing to Penn State, leaving Medicine Hat of the Western League, there's always a few nervous Nellies like me around wanting to know what the future of junior hockey in our country is. So, Dan, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, John. It's always good to see you.
So, the McKenna news obviously came as no surprise to you, as it did to didn't come to many of us. How do you put what happened to Gavin and what is happening with the new CHL NCAA agreement proceeding? What do you make of it?
Well, listen, I think first of all, you've got to just acknowledge how, you know, Gavin McKenna is an exceptional player, and he, you know, we're really proud to see that he came through our league and did very well. He was one of, John, I know you're a hockey historian. There aren't many players that have won CHL Rookie of the Year in their first year and then the next year won Player of the Year. I think Sidney Crosby did it. Lafreniere might have done it, but there aren't many. So he's in rare company. And, you know, he made a decision that he felt was best for him. And I think, you know, we wish him well. We're going to be cheering him on next year. But I think we got to be a little bit careful that we don't, you know, paint a variety of players that are that age with the same brush, because there are very, very few players that age, number one, who have the kind of success that he did in the CHL. And then also the kind of players who can thrive at that next level, you know, in the NCAA. And so he's going to be the norm that other players should be measured against, and that where the future is going. I mean, this is definitely a changing landscape. Absolutely. We had a really good year at the draft. You know, CHL does a really good job developing players to play pro hockey. We've been doing it for a long time, as you know. This year at the draft, 21 of 32 players came out of the CHL. So 66% of the first round came out of the CHL. And we don't really see that changing. If anything, we're tracking, and I'll talk a little bit about kind of what it looks like in terms of players coming into the league and players leaving the league. But, you know, in fact, that number could grow in the future because we're seeing an influx of elite players from across North America, specifically migrating to the CHL. So since the rule changed in November, and John, I want to correct you because I've heard people talk about the CHL NCAA agreement. There's no real agreement. The CHL changed the rule, or the NCAA changed the rule.
Okay. And so the only reason I put it that way is that you and I, like, you've been in a dozen meetings. I know that Bill Daly has chaired lots of meetings that you've been attending, that NCAA teams have, and the NCAA has attended, trying to create and understand the landscape, though, right?
Yeah, but I think the difference is that there isn't really anyone at the NCAA who speaks for the NCAA. I think is the, like, this rule got changed by the lawyers and the administrators, not the hockey people. So it's a bit of the NCAA is a bit of a nebulous, you know, entity that. So I think it would be great if we could sit down at the table with someone and talk about player movement. But right now, that's just not really a possibility. So. You know, the NHL has done a really good job of trying to get everyone in the system together to talk and see what the future would look like. But again, we're all in this world where we're trying to gauge, you know, what's happening. And it's going to take some time for this to play out. Like, we don't exactly know where it's going to land. I can tell you, you know, I was talking earlier about players coming to the CHL. So, So since the rule change, we've had 168 players and counting migrating to the CHL. And so these would be younger players, 16, 17 year olds coming, and they're coming from a few places. They're coming from the USHL. They're coming from the BCHL. They're coming from Canadian Junior, from prep schools. And so those are players who either the CHL teams had their rights, and because they were protecting their eligibility, they're now choosing to come because they can play NCAA hockey. Mm-hmm. Or it's some players who never even thought about the CHL in the past. Didn't, he wasn't even considered, and then are, you know, they're making the decision to come. And then on the flip side, what we're seeing is we've lost about 150 players since the rule changed, and about 85% of those have aged out. They're either 19 or 20, and so 15% still have eligibility. There's three players who are in their draft year. And McKenna's one of them that have chosen to leave.
There are a couple of other players like Lindstrom, who's a first round pick of the Blue Jackets, right? He's gone.
Correct. So he's made a commitment to the NCAA. There's been a few of those. So that makes up that 15%, but there's sort of two groups. There's the draft year group, and then there's the group who's made the decision not to sign their ELC and is choosing to go to college. And that'll be something they'll work on with their NHL team. But I think when you're talking about McKenna specifically, there aren't many who are in that mode of, like, for my draft year, I'm going to leave. And again, I don't think that's going to be the norm. I think most players are going to choose to play in the CHL in their draft year. So, but that's how the numbers are looking. So it's not, when you hear people talk about the demise, you know, like the CHL's, you know, changed forever. I think that's a little bit of hyperbole. I think we got to see where it goes, but we're seeing a massive influx on the bottom end. And we're not seeing, you know, we're seeing some players choose to make that decision, but not, the numbers aren't huge. And I think, you know, when you look at, you know, as you know, John, I didn't spend my whole career in hockey. So, you know, when I came and I learned about how player movement worked. I mean, there's, you know, historically there have been some really good players who haven't chose to play in the CHL. And so you think about the pathway to the NHL, it's changing. You know, the Celebrinis and the Powers never would have, you know, never came to the CHL. They went that route. Mm-hmm. And then it went to the NHL. You know, I think it's probably still a little bit too early to tell, but what it looks like is going to happen is we're going to get all the top 16, 17, 18 year olds in the CHL. And then I think the decision there, then the question will be, okay, well, do they stay for their 19th year or not?
Right.
That's going to be the question. And I think that's just the sort of indicative of the changing landscape we're in.
So your league's going to get younger.
It could get younger. I think it's going to get, I think that's the question. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see more. I think we're going to see probably a higher caliber at the younger age levels. I think we're going to get more skilled and a bit younger. I think the question's going to be, what are the choices the players make when they're older? And I can tell you that there's not a lot of desire on our side to not be a great place for 19-year-olds to develop, right? Like we think that, you know, the model for developing elite hockey players, the 19-year-old is critically important. And again, John, I know you worked for the NHL and you spent a lot of time with NHL general managers. Mm-hmm. You talk to them, they would say the hardest sort of adjustment for a young player coming into the NHL is how they get used to the grind. Like, how do you get used to what's soon going to be an 84-game schedule, four rounds of the playoffs, right? And so, you know, I think the model that we have is it prepares players for that. It's a 68-game schedule. There's travel. Some of the travel's, you know, a lot of time on buses, and you got to be able to manage your nutrition and your workouts and your rest and that kind of thing. 68 games, four rounds of seven games, and then the Memorial Cup. Like, it's a grind. And so I think that because the career of NHL players is pretty short and it starts pretty early, you know, I think it starts at 22. I was talking to someone the other day who said, you know, they got to be ready when they get their chance. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I think our model has proven to be a model that gets players ready. And so we feel pretty comfortable that we're going to continue to do that. And so we're going to work really hard to make sure that those 19-year-olds have a home and are huge parts of the teams they play in.
Okay. So that's from a player perspective, and it makes sense. I mean, it looks like it's players in and players out, which makes a ton of sense. It almost looks like they're, and I have had this discussion with a few of Western operators and a few people in the game, and it might be the end of the overager, correct?
You know what? That's
not officially. I mean, this is what the next 5 years is going to work out, right? Right?
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, it could be, but I think there's still going to be a place for that player who's a late bloomer. Mm-hmm. Right. And who doesn't have a desire to go to school. Maybe they want to be a pro hockey player and they, you know, and they're not interested in going to class. And so the NCAA may not be an option. They're not good enough yet to play. They're not developed enough to play in the AHL. And so the CHL is going to be, again, I think it's our job to make sure that we, you know, make sure that it's a tough and a hard enough league to play in when you're that age. You know, and the other thing, John, I think we also don't know is the number of players. Again, I think this rule change, one of the things it's done for us is it's opened us up to North America. And there are a lot of hockey players in the U.S. and, mm-hmm. you know, in the NHL, in the USHL. And it'll be interesting to see how those players view the CHL. And again, I think for some players, it might be an option that they never would have considered before.
What about teams? You know, Penn State is a giant monolithic. And now this is just the thumbnail. Penn State's a big business. The Medicine Hat Tigers are a small town franchise. I'm one of those guys that always looks at financials and wonders, how do small towns, which is, in my opinion, Dan, one of the great aspects of your league, and what you deliver to many Canadians, many Americans in those cities. What does it do to the small town franchises? I'm not worried about London. I'm not worried about Kelowna. I'm not worried about Halifax. But I am concerned about the Medicine Hats and the Owen Sounds.
Well, John, I think that the answer is running a great program. And I mean, it's funny. I was going back and forth with the commissioner of WHL over the weekend, and we were talking about how the incoming class that Medicine Hat has into their team next year, they're going to be really good.
Yeah.
You know, losing Gavin McKenna is obviously a big blow for the hockey team, but they've been able to attract good players. And I think you look at Medicine Hat and you look at that it's a small town, but they've got stable ownership. They've got a really good coach. They've got a nice facility. They treat their players well. You know, they've got facilities that are, I mean, they're not, again, very few of our teams are going to be able to compete with, you know, Penn State or Michigan on the facilities standpoint, because they're, you know, billion-dollar entities. But I think if you run a good program, and you treat players well, and then that comes down to having high standards, right? So you've got to have, you know, good coaching. You've got to be able to be, progressive in the areas of things like sports science and nutrition and, you know, strength and conditioning. Those are all must-haves in today's hockey world. And with, you know, the NCAA now at the top end and being a choice for our players, we have to get better in those areas. We just have to. And our leagues are aware of that, and they're working through their, each of the leagues is working through their subcommittees to, you know, raise their standards. I think slowly we are seeing venue improvements happen across the CHL. This year, I could name, if you go across the whole country, I could name probably 8 or 9 buildings that are being renovated. And, you know, as you know, our buildings are community owned. So this becomes a situation where the team works with the community to get upgrades done. But I can tell you, just like you talk about how important junior hockey is to the communities across Canada, these communities are competitive. And if they start losing players, when they're older, because their facilities aren't good enough, guess what's going to happen? They're going to start, you know, working with their governments to improve. And then I think the other thing that we can control on our side is some rule changes and regulation changes, and making it, you know, I'll give you one as an example. There was a rule in one of our leagues about how it was, you know, that made it more difficult for teams to sign players to welcome them back if they went to the NCAA and what they, you know, it wasn't the experience that they were promised, it made it harder for them to come back. And we, you know, those are the kinds of changes that we're just going to make so that, you know, if a player does decide they want to come back, they can come back. So those kinds of things. So I think that the answer is, you know, for the small market teams, there's a variety of things that you can do. But I think if you run a good program and you've got, you know, you've got good ownership and a good staff and, you know, good facility, I think you can compete.
What does it do to your scholarship programs? Does it change it at all?
So our leagues have modified them a little bit to incent players to stay. Right. So if you do leave early and you go to the NCAA and you get a full scholarship, then the team would be relieved of the obligations.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, as you know, John, the vast majority of the players in our league don't play in the NHL.
Right.
And so those players who come and who play 4 years and then bank their scholarship and then go off and play whether U Sports or the NCAA, those players will have their scholarships to use.
So the other aspect of this is we touched on the NHL having a bit of a role, just trying to understand the world. Where are Hockey Canada and USA Hockey in all this?
I think they're very much like us right now, kind of watching to see where the player movement falls. I think that's you sort of bring up three organizations that are all sort of invested in North American hockey development. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the group, along with ourselves, that we'll be having some discussions in the future about what, you know, is the current model the one that goes forward. We're very comfortable with the current model, but I think that, you know, there's no secret that some of our leagues have talked openly about expanding, and especially as the player pool opens and there's more American players that are considering the CHL. I think, you know, those are some markets. There's some markets in the U.S. that I think our teams would like to expand to. And so as that evolves, those will be discussions that we'll end up having with USA Hockey. I think we'd like to be viewed as we go forward as we'd like to be an integral part of the North American development system. That includes the U.S. So we'll see where those discussions go, but those are ahead of us.
Obviously, for people in Ontario, there'd be a little more understanding that, I guess, Muskegon and Youngstown were the two obvious choices when you talk about teams wanting to join the O that ended up having an issue with or being denied by USA Hockey and the USHL to transfer leagues. But this isn't necessarily in your bailiwick, Dan, but is there... Any thought process about what happens to the other junior leagues and the USHL and all of this?
Yeah, I think, and I think you're sort of referencing, you referenced a little bit earlier on the call, you know, some work by the NHL to have discussions with everybody about future looks like. And so I think those discussions, there is, I think, some momentum around that. But again, it's pretty early days. So we don't really, there isn't a clear path forward on that front yet. I think we want to see what the NHL comes back with and what they'd like to see. I think the one thing though, that this rule change has done, when I talked before about the various pathways, right? One of the pathways on the Canadian side of the border was players who go play in Junior A before and then to maintain their eligibility. And I think what you're going to see, and we're starting to see it now, is I think a definite integration in a more closely defined relationship between Major Junior, Junior A, Junior B. I think that over time is going to be something that is going to develop, and I think is going to be good for the game in Canada, especially in certain, I would say for certain positions, right? Like if you're a goalie, as an example, if you're a 16-year-old goalie, there aren't many 16-year-old goalies that excel in the CHL. But if you can go up and you can play CHL, you can play Junior A, you can go up and back, or Junior B, go up and back, depending on where you are in the country, and you can play a full slate of games over the course of a year, I think that would be great for player development. I think, as a Canadian, I think that's going to be a positive byproduct of this over time. We're not there yet, and the leagues have to, the agreements have to be figured out. And I know there's lots of work that Hockey Canada is doing right now on their the Canadian development model. And, our leagues are working with the branches on various things. But I think over time, if you take a step back and you look back 10 years from now, I think you're going to say, that was good for the Canadian system.
So that's the question. How long do you think it will take before the land ever settles beneath your feet?
Well, assuming nothing.
If ever, by the way.
assuming status quo in terms of major changes, and that's not, we've talked about some of the things that could change that would upend it. But if there's nothing major coming forward, I think on this rule, I've said before, I think about 3 years. I think within 3 years, we're going to have a sense for what the new pathways are and where players want to be as they develop and what the impacts for us are on the bottom end and the top end of our system. So I'd say 3 years would be my guess. But again, if some of the other things that we've chatted about come to pass, that could be more upheaval. And you just got to roll with it and do your best to adjust to it. And again, I feel pretty confident in our model, to be honest. And I think that, we're going to be a part of an elite hockey player's development no matter what happens.
So the message really is the sky isn't falling.
No, sky's not falling at all. Again, Gavin McKenna is a great player, and we're going to watch him in the NHL for a long time. But he's a unique talent.
Now, curiously, does Medicine Hat, they don't get any money for it when McKenna gets drafted, they will not get any money from the NHL team, correct?
The way it's currently constructed, no.
Can that change?
I don't know. We'll have to talk to the NHL about that. but it's just for clarity. I mean, the way it's constructed, no.
Okay. Before we let you go, and it's been great, I think people will understand a little bit more of what's going on. Dribs and drabs are coming out about the new CBA in the National Hockey League, that one of them allows for a 19-year-old to play in the American League. Were you involved in that discussion at some point, and how do you think that affects what you're doing?
Well, I think what's been reported is that in our agreement with the NHL, they have the ability to open up that issue with us. And so I think the agreement with the CBA in the new CBA says that they are going to open up that issue and that we're going to discuss it. So we're actually, myself and the commissioners are off to New York this week to spend some time with our friends at the NHL, just to start the discussions about what that issue would look like. But the details of it are to be determined. And so the NHL has been very good about, wanting to, get our view and talk to us about what that could look like. Cause, that could have a pretty significant impact on, on our development system. So, but those talks are ahead of us. And so we'll see where it goes.
It's actually quite interesting because both sides, the players and the owners, have announced that the new deal is ratified, but it hasn't been papered yet. So there's a lot of work to do on that side. And obviously you're going to be affected and involved in at some level on some key points, which will affect young players, NHL teams, and obviously the member clubs of the CHL.
Absolutely. Yep. And it's, again, CHL and the NHL have been partners for a long time. We're the number one source of talent. Half of the NHL, 50% of the players have played in CHL. And we think that number is going to go up, especially given some of the things we've talked about. So yeah. I think that it's important that we, are at the table talking about the impact on that development system, because at the end of the day, the NHL is going to be affected by whatever decisions get made. So, we're looking forward to having those discussions and continuing that strong relationship.
And coming off a pretty good draft.
Pretty good draft. 90 players overall, John, which is, I think, the best since I've been here, for sure. And I think it's, by far the number one development league in the world in terms of draft picks coming in the NHL. So we're pretty happy with how that went.
Well, thanks for this, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
That's Dan McKenzie, president of the Canadian Hockey League. When we come back, we've talked about players joining the National Hockey League. Now let's talk about players who are leaving the National Hockey League. We'll spend some time with Glenn Healy, the executive director of the NHL Alumni, and how the new CBA affects exactly what he's doing. This is 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Welcome back to 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Millard is still off. But he will be back Wednesday when Glenn Gulletson of the Dallas Stars joins us, joined by another Glenn right now, Glenn Healy, the executive director of the NHL Alumni, where we were last week at the golf event. Thanks for the hospitality, Glenn. And really, what we want to talk about, the last time you were on, we had a huge following as we talked about what the Maple Leafs are doing. But I want to spend some time today really talking about your real job. And what this new collective bargaining agreement between the players and the league means to your group.
Well, John, thanks for that. And thanks for coming to the golf tournament. It was great. Your bar bill, your food bill, we've sent it to you. And thank goodness we didn't have Millard there, because it would have been so over the top.
We certainly the bar bill.
Here. Yeah. You know, the league and the NHLPA and the foundation of the game, which is the players, the ones who have built the game, the ones that have made the CBA 600 pages so that the current players have the rights they have. We have sat down for a number of years and talked about how we make a better tomorrow and today for the players that are retired and aren't going to put 2 points on the board or a goal in the assist and goal column, but now are looking at not the short career, but the long life and how to make it better. And our focus with the PA and Marty Walsh and with the league, Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, has always been, how can we give back to players that have paved the roads for the current players to drive on? And over the past number of years, we have tried to come up with a wellness plan that would help players in their life to make a better tomorrow and today. And I think over the course of this negotiation, and not with any negotiations with Don Fehr, because he had zero interest in helping us, Marty Walsh has had the interest. Gary and Bill always have as well. And so we have found a way through the collective bargaining agreement to provide some dollars that are going to help a lot of players and their families in that long journey after the short career. So I'm proud to say that all of us, now that the music has stopped and the collective bargaining, although agreed to in principle, although ratified, not fully papered by the lawyers yet, so we'll see how that goes, as we know. But there is, in spirit, an agreement to help players and their families in this collective bargaining agreement. And I'm very proud of that, and I'm proud of the players that have taken part. And trust me, it's not Glenn Healy. This has been everyone from Bobby Orr and Ray Bourque and Ty Domi and Mark Messier, and I could go down the list, Adam Graves, where we have worked diligently to try to create something in the collective bargaining agreement with the help of current players and the help of the league and their partners and the ownership groups of all the 32 teams to make a difference. And it is now official, ratified, and now it's a matter of waiting for it to be papered. And then at that point, creating a plan that will help players and their families.
You know, you bring up some names, some guys that we all know and that all did very well in the game. But the reality of your constituency is there's thousands of players that didn't make as much money and didn't have prolific careers, but are now having struggles. And really, that's a big part of what your mandate is, isn't it?
Yeah, make tomorrow better than today, for sure. And honor the past. I'm in the NHL alumni office today, as we are every day. And if I was to change the name on the front of the door, it would be the foundation. That's what we are, the foundation of the game. And if I was to put something underneath it, I would steal it from Liverpool Soccer Football Club, and it would be, you will never walk alone. And knowing that as a player and as a teammate that maybe I didn't play with, but they've got a place to go to get help and hope, I'm proud of that. And I think that's when I walked through the door the very first day, that was our focus. Not about the alumni games. You take on the fire department and the police department and you kick their butts because you're an NHL player. No, not that. It is all about making a better tomorrow and today, because as you know, and any of your listeners, if you don't have money, that's all you think about. How am I going to pay my bills? Okay, if you don't have health, you don't have your wellness, that is definitely all you think about. And if it's a family member, if it's a kid that is in your house that's having trouble and you don't have an answer, if you don't have help and hope, trust me, it's an exhausting process and you feel helpless and hopeless. And I don't want to ever have that with any player, to have that feeling. They're on our team. They're going to join our team. And when they retire, on these walls, they walk through the foundation, they'll never walk alone. And I think that has been my focus. And the biggest reason I sit in this chair is to provide just that.
And you have a growing group of players, 130, 140 a summer?
Yeah, don't tell the 100 that don't know yet. but, you know, it is ironic because what you have, John, is, you know, typically the first calls from a general manager or a TV executive like yourself calling a broadcaster like myself and saying, you're fired.
Yeah.
But that wasn't you, but it was friends of yours.
No, okay. No, that wasn't me. I also got the call for you, or a long discussion about you by your general manager that said, do you think you can have a job for Glenn? Because we don't think he can play goal anymore.
Well, you know, the problem with that call, he was 4 years too late. He should have called when I was 35. I was done then. I just didn't tell anybody. It was my secret. So don't tell anyone. But, you know, when you look at it, you're absolutely right. That's a terrible call. You're not going to play. But you always think you're going to play again. Because right. I still dress like I was when I was 18. Left skate first, then my right skate, then the left pad. I don't think there's much of a change in the way I feel. Although on the other side of the camera, there is a different feeling for like Leaf fans in my last 4 years watching me. I do recall the one game against San Jose when one of the fans threw a crutch on the ice. I didn't really like that one too much. However, maybe that was a statement to me. But, you know, we think we're the same. We're not. And then we're done. Now, you certainly can't go to the KHL and play. There's a couple things that happen around the world that prohibits that. But the next letter that you get from Mr. Batman, from Marty Walsh, from myself saying, welcome to the club, you're officially an alumni and you're on Glenn's team now. That's not a great letter to get, because that basically means, all right, the journey has ended and it's now time for the next journey. But trust me when I say this to you, to the fans, and to every player that's going to be one of the 135, it's a darn good journey. And anything that you learn on the ice can transpose off the ice to make that next journey great, equally as rewarding, as fruitful. Maybe the dollars aren't the same, but man, the purpose and the reward is there. And so that is a hard letter to send, but we are going to be here for every player, every wife, and everyone's kids who need help. And that will never change as long as I sit in the seat. We will be there to help every one of the players in the hockey family. And that includes the wives, and that includes the kids.
And I mean, how do you do that? I mean, that's a huge task, isn't it?
It is. But Johnny, I have a team of people that care,
right,
that are doing this for a better cause than just I'm seeing another patient. It's I'm seeing a family that I can make a difference for. And it's everything from our top chief medical officer, who's one of the leading neurosurgeons in the world and works out of Chicago, and came over from Uganda when Idi Amin wanted to make him an appetizer. Mm-hmm. And then they decided that he would become a neurosurgeon, run the Ottawa Neural Psych Hospital, then did it at UPMC as the chair, then went to the Aurora Medical Group and now runs a great facility. From Dr. Clairfield, who worked for the Leafs, worked with you probably when you were hanging around the Leafs for all those years, for decades. It is the social work team that includes a female that works with just the wives. We also have a player who has his social work, Ben Scrivens, degrees, but needs work experience. So Jerry Jermaka, who worked in one of the worst and most difficult hospitals for drug addiction and people that needed the most help, who is on board every single day, and they help 500 players, to dentists, from Dr. Solomon in New York to Grant Lewis, who was a player. I have an army of people that want to help. And when my phone rings, the great thing, the stress and pressure you may feel as you're intimated, I don't feel that because I have a call and a football to throw to send to somebody to make a huge difference. And that difference, there's always going to be an answer to a question. I think that's the most important thing.
And does this differ between countries? Like, is this a bigger challenge in Canada versus the United States or vice versa?
Well, every province in Canada has their issues. Every state in the United States has their issues. And so I think what you look at is, and look at countries in Europe have their issues as well. So Finland would be different than Sweden. Finland and Sweden would be different than Czech Republic and would be different than Russia. So, yeah, all of these things have to go into consideration. Yeah, when we build a wellness plan, everyone has different rules, different laws, and we have to make a big difference for all of the groups, because a player in Europe matters just as much as that guy who's sitting in Toronto. We are not the Toronto Maple Leaf alumni. We are not the Toronto alumni. We're the National Hockey League alumni with 1,318 members in Europe, and we are worldwide. And everybody in our group is a part of our team, and no man's left behind.
And you touched on some big names earlier. This is something that you have been able to get Wayne and Mario and all the big guns involved in as well, correct?
Well, if you're going to have Christmas, you better have baby Jesus in the manger. So let's start with 99 and start with Wayne, and then carry it on from there and realize that all of those players, whether it was Dave Semenko who fought for Wayne on every given night and maybe needed some medical help when he needed it most and didn't have it, that's where Wayne steps in and says, make a difference, fix it. Whether it's Mario Lemieux has called me about players that played less than 24 games for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and he has seen something on social media and said, high alert, the red light's going off, we've got some alarm bells, let's see if we can reach out and fix it. And then you look at our board, whether it's Adam Graves, who's our chair, Mark Messier, who is a part of our board and makes a difference, Paul Coffey, Dee Carbonell. It is a cache of players, again, have built the game, that understand it's time for me to give back. Yes, I might have enough money. Yes, I might have my health. Yes, I've got the things that I need, but I can help somebody else that doesn't because I have a voice. And while I have a voice, I'm going to use it. And while I had gas in the tank, I'm going to exhaust that gas in the tank.
So what's next for your group? I mean, you this has been a big project. You've been talking about this with us for, gosh, I think 5 or 6 years, Glenn. What is next for the alumni to help create awareness and protect retired players?
Well, we don't stop. Clearly, we're not at the summit of Everest. This is just a baby step in a big baby step in the right direction for Help at Home. It is up now to our team to get together and build a wellness plan, a medical plan that's going to help as many players as we possibly can to keep building that program, to help more players, and to keep understanding. Look, I know what the players of my generation need. I mean, you could probably tell what all the generation of broadcasters or league executives needed when you worked for the league and you worked for Hockey Night Canada and you worked for all the various networks. But there is a new wave of players that is coming about that is going to retire. There is your Austin Matthews. There will be your Mitch Marners. There will be Connor McDavid. What will they need when they retire? It might be different than the guy who played in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, who had terrible pensions and maybe have coping mechanism issues. And that new generation, it might be mental wellness. So while we build for what we have today, we also have to build for the future to make sure that their issues are addressed. And we have to continue to look at all the players as a triangle and understand being reactive, which is not good enough, would be acute intervention. So when a player needs to go to rehab or he's got a major issue, we take care of that, yes. But acute intervention is not the answer. It's building the triangle so that all the stuff around it, around the players, is taken care of, from marital help, financial help, emotional help, from the social work team, to all the things, the transition, all the things that matter. So we invert that triangle and stop racing people to the top. So that journey will not change. And then ultimately we branch off. We now have almost a storytelling part of our group where all these players have stories and we need to get them told before you are Alex Delvecchio. And you can't tell that story anymore. Or Jean Beliveau, or Henri Richard, or Maurice Richard, or Gordie Howe. We didn't tell those stories in the appropriate way. Well, the alumni, we're going to tell them. So we're branching off and we're creating more and more entities for this group. It's a snowball and an engine that can't be stopped. So I'm proud of it. And when I leave here and turn the lights off, it's going to be better than I got here. And the next guy, it's up to them to carry on that way.
So how do you generate revenue other than getting money from the Players Association and the league?
Well, we operate on our own. Players Association, league, help in areas like wellness, like healthcare, help in areas like the Emergency Assistance Fund, where they're catastrophic and financial distress for players. But, you know, there are names on the front of the sweater. That would be the league. But the name on the back of the sweater matters just as much, too. So whether it is a hockey card set, whether it is an EA Sports game that have players like Gretzky and Lemieux and Orr in the game when it comes to an EA Sports game, or whether it's the 400 players that have a hockey card set. We're the only sport that has an alumni-only set. Hmm. Other sports have players in the set, but not a Legends alumni-only set. So those are areas where the likeness of the player, like we did in 92 with the 10-day strike, where we turned the worm in here and said, we will replicate what the NHLPA did with Bob Goodenow in 92, and anything you can put a player on, a bobblehead, a pin, a puck, a poster, you name it, we will do that. Name on the back of a sweater. You want to buy a Gretzky sweater, then you're going to come through here, we'll generate money. And this endeavor, which we're a charity, this money will go directly to the players and their families and to other causes that are out there where we realize maybe some hockey communities can make a difference. So in other words, cancer, ALS. And, you know, the other thing, John, every player has a number. When you sign a contract, you get a number stamped to you. Mm-hmm. Glenn Healy's number is 2144. I'm the 2,144th player to play in the NHL and sign a contract. So anyone that played before me, player 1,000, player 1,500, it is up to me to make sure I don't let them down because they fought for me. And at the player is 2145, it's up to that player to make sure that the things that we have built as a group, as a foundation, that they don't let me down. And so Austin Matthews and the players that are player number 5,000, player that are number 6,000 that have signed contracts, don't take this shop and go from five or six social workers to two. 30 doctors to 4. Mm-hmm. Go from 30 to 40, go from 6 to 12. Keep building this. Your number matters. 2144, which is me, is not going to let that guy down who fought for me. And let's start with Ted Lindsay, who built the Player Association and taught me a valuable lesson early on. He told me very early on, I like the corners. I didn't understand that because I'm a goalie and I'm a chicken. And I asked him, what do you mean by that? He said, well, I could tell right away when I went into the corner with a man, whether he was a man or a chicken shit. So in your life, Glenn, when you go into the corner, be a man and don't be afraid to go into corners that no one's gone before. And Ted, you gave me a good lesson and I followed it ever since.
Knowing Ted Lindsay, I know he'd love saying chicken shit, wouldn't he?
Oh, he loved it. Terrible Ted. He was about 5'4". Oh. I don't know how he got that, but I was afraid of him even when he was in his 80s.
I will tell you right now, I worked with Ted a few times, and he was one of those guys that wanted to beat you with his handshake.
You know, I give homage and reverence to all the older players when they signed an autograph. It was an autograph.
And by the way,
their name, and they would take their times to do it.
Beautifully written in cursive. Beautifully written.
And now I look at the current players, and it's just a line and a squiggle. And I am one of them, and I'm guilty of it. So,
you know what? You and I have worked together a long time. You were a great broadcaster. You are a great broadcaster. You did a great job for the CBC during the Beijing Olympic Winter Games. But I will tell you right now, on a personal note, I think this is your calling, don't you?
Well, I think that, you know, there was a need, and there was a guy who could fill the need, and that potentially was me. There's a guy who could fill the need, that gas in the tank, and the years of I guess the ability to understand the way Gary and Bill think and the way they operate, because we were there at the start when I was a player. You had to have somebody who had the ability to, you know, understand pension. And I sat on the pension committee for 20 years. You had to have someone who understood the EAF. We created the EAF. We created Doc Shaw and Doc Lewis and Cronin back with Jeff Citrin with the Player Association many, many years ago, you know, 40, 35 years ago. We created that. So all of those areas, understanding the CBA, being part of the NHLPA and part of their group as a player rep, understanding the business of hockey. But more than that, having the trust of the players and having the trust of the people that, again, when the music stops and you're sitting in a chair, for me, for now, it's me. There will be somebody else. But this, for me, yes, it matters to me because these are players I played with, I played against. And if I can make a difference for them, then I am proud to do it, happy to do it. And there is gas in the tank to keep doing it. So it won't change. The one thing, probably never, I need a speed bump between my brain and my tongue. I don't have that. But hopefully over these years of being an executive, I might get it. But I highly doubt it. And at the end of the day, we're doing the right thing. We're not always going to be right, but we are doing the right thing.
Well, as Mr. Lindsay taught you well, when you go into the corner, be a man, right?
And not a chicken shit, Johnny. I think that's been your mantra, too. So, hey, you're not going to be calling me names like that. I'm telling you, you are a guy who was great at that as well, because you took the chance and weren't a chicken shit and hired someone like me, who had no clue how to do broadcasting. And if I could tell you those stories, I don't know how I lasted through my first 3 games. But you stuck with me, and it worked out okay.
You did. Well, thanks for this, man.
All right, Johnny. Good stuff.
Hey, listen, have a great time camping this week.
You know, it isn't incredible how someone who lives on Lake Ontario is going camping, and it's going to be fantastic. You know, the black flies in a tiny tent, rain coming down, trying to cook on a little thing like this. And we're going to, guess what lake? Lake Ontario. Why don't I just stay at home? I'm Lake Ontario, but no, I'm going to drive somewhere else to Lake Ontario. And hey, 3 daughters, going to spend a lot of time with the 3 daughters. And man, as much as I'm happy to leave at the end of this week or next week, as much as I'm happy, they're going to be a lot happier. I can tell you that.
That's Glenn Healy, Executive Director of the NHL Alumni. This is 100% Hockey. Special thanks to Glenn Healy and Dan McKenzie for taking some time with us today. It's fascinating to think that we talk about playing careers and teams in the National Hockey League and players who average between 1 year and 15 years in the NHL, and we all assume they have it all rosy, but the life of a hockey player, not an NHL hockey player, but the life of a hockey player begins long before they join an NHL team and ends long after they leave the NHL. And these two gentlemen have an impact on exactly that. So it's a fascinating storyline, and hopefully you've got a little bit more of an insight. We'll be back on Wednesday morning. Glenn Gulletson, the new head coach of the Dallas Stars, will join Darren and I. Yes, Darren will be back on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Have a great day.